The turbulent energy market, where prices for fossil fuels have been tumbling for 10 months now, has just driven a huge merger. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. There's news this morning that Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, will merge with another huge natural gas and oil company, BG Group, for just under $70 billion in cash and stock. BG provides a lot of the liquefied natural gas in America, and you know Shell already. Joining me live for some context is Marketplace's Scott Tong. Scott?
David, this is the biggest oil and gas deal in 17 years, the second biggest ever after Exxon's acquisition of Mobil back in the late 90s. Shell, like all the big so-called super major oil companies, now only makes 50-some dollars selling a barrel of oil compared to 100-something back in the summer, so it's struggling, and now it picks up a new source of business for cheap. The BG company has big oil fields in the waters off of Brazil, and it has a big natural gas project in Australia.
All right, so gas. There's a lot of talk that this shakes up the so-called liquefied natural gas market. How?
Well, a lot of the world plans to burn less coal in the next generation and to make electricity. Natural gas is an obvious alternative. So for companies, there's money in drilling natural gas and then freezing or liquefying it to shrink it for transport and shipping it. Now, Shell is a big player in the space, so this would make it a gianter giant. That's the bet.
Could we see more deals like this, do you think?
Well, low prices force these kinds of considerations, and a merger can help you cut costs and survive a shakeout. The last price bust in the late 90s prompted Exxon and Mobil to get hitched, so stay tuned.
All right, Scott Tong, thank you. Stock in BG Group is up 37% in London now. As for Shell, despite its assertion that the merger will make it more competitive, its stock is down 2% now. BG used to be British Gas, a state-owned company privatized by the British government under Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher just about 30 years ago. Now, staying with this energy theme, I want to turn to power and the worst drought in California in maybe 1,000 years, experts say. The snowpack in the Sierra Nevada mountains is 94% below average, and that also hurts power generation. Marketplace's Sabri Benishor reports.
Normally, hydropower fuels about 15% of California's energy needs. So what happens when there's less hydro?
It almost cuts it in half.
Heather Cooley directs the water program at the nonprofit Pacific Institute. She says California has had to turn to dirtier energy sources.
Generating this electricity from other sources increased greenhouse gas emissions from power plants by up to 8%.
Hydropower is cheap, so replacing it has cost Californians an estimated $1.4 billion extra for their power over the last 3 years. Next year, it'll be another $300 million.
We will have somewhat dirtier air, somewhat higher prices of power, but the lights will stay on.
Robert Weissmiller chairs California's Energy Commission. Some good news, he says, California has other renewables it can turn to.
Solar and wind has more or less doubled, or 2.5 times, between 2012 through 2014.
Without that, he says, things would be worse. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. In London, the FTSE 100 index is up 0.6%. The key index in Hong Kong hit a 7-year high today, up 3.8%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down. Government thinks patients once released from the hospital are coming back to the hospital too soon. So a couple years ago, the Department of Health and Human Services decided to penalize a hospital's Medicare reimbursements if the number of patients who came back to the hospital within 30 days exceeded the national average. The result? Hospitals are spending lots of money to find ways to keep patients from coming back. Gretchen Kuda-Crowan reports on how all this is going.
Mary Knight has asthma and a lung disease called COPD. Difficulty breathing recently sent Mary to her local hospital in Elyria, Ohio. I spoke to her in the hospital lobby after she was discharged. In her hands was a packet from the hospital containing 30 days of free steroids and antibiotics.
And then they also gave me a prescription for Singular, which is going to help with the asthma.
Every patient with a diagnosis of COPD at University Hospital's Elyria Medical Center leaves with that packet. It's one of the ways they're trying to keep this fragile group of patients from landing back in the hospital and driving up their readmission rates. Wei-Jen Chang is a hospitalist at UCSD who's studied the problem of COPD readmission rates. Chang's research suggests it's not the quality of care in the hospital that's critical to keeping COPD patients healthy. It's what happens and doesn't happen after they leave.
Not having good follow-up, not being compliant with their medications, not getting the appropriate oxygen therapies.
Chang and his team have lobbied the hospital for money to hire coordinators to follow up with their COPD patients and help them get outpatient services. But so far, they've been unsuccessful.
It turns out that even if you're making a difference in the lives of patients for the better, you may not be making a difference for the better in your hospital's bottom line.
At MetroHealth Medical Center in Cleveland, they've done something similar to what Chang hopes to do. They hired a half dozen staff to identify patients at risk for readmission and guide their outpatient care. As a result, they've managed to reduce their readmission rates by 20%, says Alfred Connors, MetroHealth's chief of medicine.
We can make quite a difference in the readmission rate. It's clearly better for our patients, so we should do that.
But the question is, what are hospitals willing to invest to do it? It's clear that hospitals want healthier patients. It's less clear how much of their own financial health they're willing to sacrifice to get there. I'm Gretchen Kudakroen for Marketplace.
And vacation days offered versus vacation days taken. In Germany and France, they typically get 30 days, and people take all 30 each year. In the U.S., 15 offered, about 13 taken. Japan, 20 offered, but workers take only half of those. The Financial Times reports today that a number of big employers in Japan are trying to help with new policies to restore work-life balance. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.